This is The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. Hispanic people have experienced higher rates of COVID-19 infection, hospitalization, and death compared to white counterparts. That's just one of the findings from the Kaiser Family Foundation, and it's happening in part because Hispanic families are more likely to live in households that embrace multiple generations and are more likely to work essential jobs. We're spending the next hour on the Ideas Network exploring the challenges unique to Hispanic people in this pandemic and learning how advocates are trying to help. What's your experience? Call 800-642-1234. Have you been able to get the vaccine? Do you want to? Does your family depend on bilingual information sources? What do you see as barriers? You can call 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. To start us off, we've got Zeno Franco, who's an associate professor of family and community medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Zeno, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me, Keely.
That recent report from the Kaiser Family Foundation shows that Hispanic people are more likely than the general population to get COVID-19 and even suffer financial hardship throughout the pandemic. How have you seen this play out in Wisconsin?
Absolutely. I think, you know, for us, we actually had a rapid response grant early on in the pandemic that was really focused on trying to provide services to four different communities of color, African-American, Hispanic, Southeast Asian, and Native American as well. And so, you know, we've been very embedded in the process at the community level of trying to respond to this. And exactly the problems that you've described have been issues for us. Access to public health information that is fully translated into Spanish was a very big problem early on. As we've transitioned into sort of the vaccine situation, we're trying to really encourage people to go and get the vaccine doses. And I think in the Hispanic community, there's just a number of fears and considerations around it, too, that we have to be very careful to address thoroughly.
And not just fears about the vaccine, but even about the process itself.
Absolutely. There are households with mixed documentation status, and folks are, you know, kind of worried procedurally what's going to happen. There's, you know, considerations around trust and confidence in you know, kind of coming to a site to get a vaccine and, you know, how that's going to go. There's just a lot of considerations for Hispanic families right now, for sure.
Recent reporting shows how families in multi-generational households were at a greater risk of COVID-19 infection. You just have more places, more people in different age groups who are exposed. Was that true for Milwaukee?
Absolutely. So if you remember, you know, kind of after the first initial wave, we actually started to see a hotspot develop on the south side, and it was a very concerning time. The mayor convened a number of Hispanic leaders and, you know, response agencies that had expertise in working closely with the Hispanic community. And so, you know, we were really seeing a lot of folks, often middle-aged Hispanic men that were working essential jobs who had been laid low, really, by the virus and were hospitalized. And it was a scary time. And exactly the things that you're describing with multi-generational households. I'm a Hispanic professor at the medical college, and culturally, you know, it's just very common for Hispanic families to kind of have the entire family at home. And that's from teenagers to elders, and maybe even kind of combined families in a single home. And part of that's just dealing with the economics of trying to survive. And part of it's also cultural, that there's a huge value on the family. And that actually set up situations where sort of trying to be socially distant and trying to really protect people who are most vulnerable was very, very difficult because you just had so many people kind of coming in and out of a single household.
And then that adds to the challenge on the financial side, because if people are out of work, that makes a difference in a household.
Absolutely. I think it can't be overstated how close to the line some families are. And that's across the board. It doesn't really matter kind of what ethnic group or racial group you're talking about. There's plenty of people who are really at the wall economically, and COVID-19 and the issues that have come up with that, especially if folks are working essential jobs, that are low-paying jobs, a single person in the household that is someone that's being counted on to bring in dollars, being out of work for a week can really push a family to the line.
We're discussing how the pandemic affects Wisconsin's Latino communities and the barriers to accessing vaccines. Zeno Franco teaches family and community medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. And we are there's a line for you. We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. How has the coronavirus pandemic affected the Hispanic community where you live? What do you think leaders need to do to address the racial disparities when it comes to the pandemic, whether that's financial or coronavirus infections or immunizations? Share your question, your story at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Franco, the pandemic did not create a lot of these disparities, but it sure exposed them. How have you seen the coronavirus crisis compound disparities in your area of Wisconsin?
I live in Milwaukee and, moved here about 10 or 11 years ago. And I think, this is a very, very complex city. We've inherited a city that has built-in disparities in it in terms of the quality of housing stock, in terms of access to jobs, numerous different factors that we consider to be upstream determinants of health in our communities. And the reality is, kind of regardless of how else you may think about it, folks that come up in areas where, things have been difficult over time are going to have much higher rates of health issues, regardless of the pandemic. And then you overlay the pandemic onto that, and those racial and ethnic disparities that are, I think, really driven by geography in some ways here in Milwaukee, come to the fore in a profoundly clear way. And I think for the first time, really, in some senses, although it's been a very difficult time, the pandemic has been a blessing in one way, which is it has allowed us to really face the fact that there are health disparities in Milwaukee and in Wisconsin that are out of people's control directly. That's not to say that we can't be working on things, but we have inherited some structural problems in our city for sure.
Well, only half of all Americans say they have a great deal of trust in the CDC. Trust nationally in public health agencies is low. Does the Hispanic population trust local governments or local health officials?
I think trust is a really interesting topic, and it's something that has to be really thought through. And as I was mentioning, there are many households in the Hispanic community that we've worked with directly through community health workers over the last year that are not fully documented. And, people may have different views about that, but the reality is they're here. And if they're not getting the health services that they need and they're not getting the vaccine, that's a weak link in our preparedness to respond to this crisis. And we've actually had situations where we've responded to COVID positive households on the south side of Milwaukee. And the families basically told us we need food to be able to shelter in place so that we don't have to go to work or we don't have to go out to shop. And the city actually had food available, but those families didn't always want to take it because they didn't trust the city, right? Because they were afraid that coming forward to ask for help would expose their lack of documentation. And so what we did is we actually worked with community health workers to deliver food directly to those homes. So that was, fully bilingual, bicultural community health workers working with the city to take the food and drop it off at the front door of the home without even entering the home. And that's a situation where you're actually building trust into it by ensuring the person knocking on the door is someone that's trusted.
Well, you mentioned the bilingual aspect, and you've been working with the county and the city to get people who speak multiple languages in the community to share information and connect folks with resources. Why have you found that is an effective strategy?
Cultural tailoring of any public health messaging in a crisis is really, really key. We forget how many people don't watch the news. Older generation, regardless, it could be white, it could be Hispanic, it could be Hmong, may not be engaging with social media, right? So there's just some generational differences. And I think the reality is, you know, we've actually taken some public health messaging from the city and translated into Hmong and some of the Southeast Asian languages into Spanish, put those flyers that have been kind of collaboratively created between the city and these communities into the hands of these community health workers. And that actually enables them to have a dialogue that is really culturally sensitive and thoughtful and helps us to get the message much deeper into those communities that need to hear this message.
Pardon me. We're talking with Zeno Franco. Excuse me. Zeno Franco is with us here on the Ideas Network. There's room for you in this discussion. 800-642-1234. I'm Keely Boltina. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. The Kaiser Family Foundation is tracking what people are experiencing and their attitudes related to COVID-19 vaccines. We're talking about it here on The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina. A recent release notes that 2 in 3 Hispanic adults are worried they or a family member will get sick from COVID-19. And that worry could be for good reason, as we recognize that Hispanic communities are dealing with more coronavirus infections and less straightforward access to vaccination, even when they want the shot. Our guest in this part of the hour is Zeno Franco, a Wisconsin Associate Professor of Family and Community Medicine. And we welcome your calls at 800-642-1234. We'd like to hear from you if you are part of the Hispanic community. How have you and your family experienced this pandemic? What do you want people throughout Wisconsin to understand? Do you have questions about the vaccine or the process and getting resources? You can give us a call now at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Zeno, we want to talk about vaccine hesitancy, but before we do that, you and other community leaders stress that we first have to deal with access for communities of color. Why?
Yeah, I think that's been a really interesting point, Keely. So early on, actually, myself, the public health department, other groups were trying to talk about vaccine confidence and vaccine hesitancy in communities of color. And one of the pushbacks that we got, and I think a really important one from one of our actually African-American community health workers was, let's worry about access to the vaccine as a first step. And so we actually really pivoted and just tried to concentrate initially on making sure the vaccine doses were available as quickly as possible and then trying to get vaccinations available and in the communities that we're trying to serve, not just at the major vaccination sites.
And yet we see that pharmacies say, hey, you can get the vaccine here. We hear state public health officials say, if you're 20 or if you're 12 or older and you want the vaccine, you can get it. But there are barriers. What are they?
Yeah, I think within the Hispanic community and really for, again, anyone who may be at the margin in terms of economics, you know, taking time off can be a problem. A lot of the vaccine clinics that were initially set up were during regular business hours just because of the logistics of trying to make it all work, which is completely understandable in terms of the public health response. But it didn't make it super easy for people to maybe get a vaccine on a weekend or later in the day. And I think we've been starting to pivot to respond to that. Also, too, I think this is one of the things that the report pointed out is that there are concerns not just about the, you know, getting time off to take the vaccine, but there are folks who have had a day or two of fairly significant side effects. Not, you know, nothing that's serious, but could kind of take you out of the running to go to work for a day or two. And people have been really worried, again, in marginalized communities about losing a day or two of work and the pay that goes along with that. And so I think, you know, some of the questions that come up are then how do we try to make sure that that can be accommodated in a way that's not going to have such significant financial impact on people. Hmm.
Democratic Congressman Jesus Chuy Garcia of Chicago recently spoke about this issue on the House floor.
Vaccine hesitancy remains an issue, but the reality is that access is an even bigger problem. If we're serious about fighting COVID-19, we need to meet people where they are and bring vaccines to those who need it most. And we can't do this without engaging with trusted community leaders.
Garcia is a member of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. Franco, which community leaders are important in this messaging?
I think we really have to think in a multi-layered way about community leadership. There are many different voices from, you know, established churches to, you know, individual people in the community who are thought leaders that no one really recognizes outside of the community. There are community health workers that we're working with extensively. There are federally qualified health health centers, the FQHC clinics, in communities that are usually low income, and those are incredibly powerful vehicles for getting this messaging out. Physicians, a person's personal physician is often the most trusted advocate and source of information. And so it really takes sort of this multi-layered approach to get the message out.
And sometimes those messages don't necessarily jibe with what people experience when they go in. For example, you know, the report points out that requesting documentation could be a barrier for some Hispanic adults who want the vaccine. And more than half of Hispanic adults who were vaccinated say they were asked to provide government-issued identification. How does being undocumented or, you know, different statuses affect a person's ability to get their healthcare needs met, including this vaccination?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a huge number of rumors out there, too, right? And so people are genuinely scared. There are also situations where, you know, maybe a vaccine provider has been a little bit not thoughtful about some of these concerns. And as soon as that happens, actually, that's a huge blow to the process, because the word gets out in the community, oh, these people were asking for additional information, or they were trying to charge us for the vaccine. That's been another big rumor out there, that there's a cost for the vaccine when in fact it should be free to all. It might be the case that insurance is being charged, but really these vaccines have already been paid for by tax dollars and should be free to anyone who wants them. And so those rumors are out there. And I think, you know, the representative that you, you know, kind of pulled into the discussion from the tape is also making a really important point about the need for mobile clinics that are delivering the vaccine either at employer sites or at churches or at functions in the community. We really have to get away from sort of this large vaccination, central vaccination piece as the single strategy. And I think we're pivoting there, but it's not quite fast enough, just to be really frank about it, to catch up with what the community is asking for.
I mean, on that same vein, then, is it going to be fast enough to work with people in our Hispanic communities and to share the information and to get people vaccinated? Or are we on a trajectory where more people will be getting sick before we can turn this around?
I think that is really the crux of it, Keely, right? So there are still lives at stake, right? For all of our communities, there are still lives at stake. There are still folks that haven't been vaccinated that we care about. And those people are at risk, and there will continue to be deaths as long as we don't hit herd immunity, right? So it's really incumbent on us to get this message out and to be really thoughtful about equity in the space. How do we make sure that communities that don't have access, easy access, maybe have gotten some misinformation, get the information they need in a way that they can really understand it, and that they can get to the vaccinator that has doses, right, that we haven't been able to get in arms yet. We actually have an excess of doses. We've got to resolve that in a way that really brings all communities forward and reduces the number of deaths that we see over the summer.
We've talked a lot about fairness, about equity. There's also an economic case to getting vaccines distributed equitably. What is that?
I think, you know, the reality for me, I think looking at this, is that there is a tremendous number of, you know, large businesses in Milwaukee and Wisconsin that really rely on labor to do manufacturing, to, you know, whatever it is, distill all these different tasks that that are sort of Milwaukee staples in the business community. And we need that labor to be ready to go and to bring us back increasingly step by step to normal. And I think that's really one of the places where business owners and business leaders should be really thinking with us about how do we engage that labor pool to make sure that labor pool is healthy right, and is ready to go. I come from a long line of, a Hispanic family, and I can tell you that they're ready to work. We're ready to work. Wisconsin's ready to get back to normal. And I think it's on all of us, you know, the community leaders, business leaders, health and public health leaders to say, how do we get there?
Zeno, thank you for breaking it down, for helping us understand what you see.
Thank you so much, Keely. We really appreciate you being there as a partner throughout this pandemic.
Zeno Franco is an associate professor of family and community medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Our conversation about vaccines and Wisconsin's Hispanic communities continues ahead. Still to come on the morning show, we explore a program hoping to improve access. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What do you want people to know? How has the coronavirus affected the Hispanic community where you live? And what do you want community leaders, elected officials to do to make things better? I'm Keely Boltina. News is next here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. New information from the Kaiser Family Foundation shows that Hispanic adults who haven't been vaccinated are twice as likely as white adults to say they want to get a COVID-19 vaccine as soon as they can. This hour, we're focusing on the pandemic and vaccinations in Latino communities. What do you want people to know about how this affects your life as an Hispanic person in Wisconsin? You can call 800-642-1234. How do you think leaders can help address racial disparities? What needs to change now and into the future? 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@WPR.org. Daryl Morin is president of Forward Latino. The organization recently launched Por Mi Familia, a campaign to help Wisconsin's Latino community get the COVID-19 vaccine. Daryl, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Keely. Thank you for having me.
Start with a baseline. What are the vaccination rates of Wisconsin's Latino population?
Well, you know, we are the state's largest minority group in the state, yet we find we're trailing rather significantly when it comes to the vaccination. So we have about 23% of all Latinos in the state have gotten both their doses. 29% have at least gotten one dose. Yeah, we trail non-Latinos throughout the state that are at 44%. So we got quite a bit of work to do to catch up.
Yeah, and that's just, at this stage. So Forward Latino has launched a vaccination campaign. It's called Por Mi Familia, For My Family. Talk about that name. Why do you think that might help people be persuaded that there's a good next step to take when it comes to vaccinations?
Well, first, I need to thank the folks at the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. They actually did a community outreach grant, and that's what's funding the majority of this. And we knew that if we were going to be effective, we needed to present or make our case in a culturally relevant way. And the family is thing that is most paramount, most important in every Latino household. So we knew we needed to present it in that way in order to motivate those who may be questioning the importance of getting it, to go out and if they're not going to get it for themselves, but to do it for their parents, to do it for their children, and, you know, por mi familia. So,
and as we've talked already in this hour, we know that Hispanic families are more likely to have multiple generations than people of other ethnicities, people living in the house, just multiple generations. How do you see that affecting the vaccination situation?
Well, and that's why we think the whole campaign can really help broaden that. But you are absolutely correct. We do have parents living with, you know, their sons and daughters who are indeed parents. So multi-generational. And conversely, we also see in that setting that if one individual gets COVID, can easily transmit it to the others, especially those that are older, having catastrophic effects on the family.
So how are you using media to get vaccine information to the right people?
Yeah, so we're actually employing a number of different strategies, but the first one is an overarching strategy to cover the entire state. We're running 5 times a day, twice in primetime across the state, television commercials on Spanish networks, encouraging people to go out. And in these commercials, we're featuring community leaders from throughout the state. So this isn't about Ford Latino. This is about getting trusted advisors, people in each community, to speak to their community. So we're doing that over in an overarching manner. And then we're also running multiple times today on all Spanish-speaking radio stations throughout the state, commercials as well, once again featuring those community leaders. And we're doing the same thing in print and social media as well.
How crucial is the Spanish component to this?
It is crucial. You know, while the overwhelming number of Latinos that live in the state of Wisconsin are competent and most are fluent in English, whenever you read anything that's medical in nature, you're always most comfortable reading it in your first language or native language. I use the analogy all the time is I have a tough enough time reading the tax code in English, and it was my native language, my first language. Imagine trying to read it in a language that is your second or third, much more difficult. And we also see this as a way of indicating that the Latino community is important, is valued. So there's a couple of different factors that go into that, making sure the information is available in Spanish.
Sure. So there's the component of making sure that accurate information is passed between public health officials and the people who need to hear it, but also an acknowledgement of our differences, of our cultures.
That is absolutely the case. In fact, at the very beginning, we started working with the CDC because we saw some shortcomings there. And through that process, we actually became very good partners and been working with them throughout the pandemic. The same thing here in Wisconsin with the Department of Health Services. They threw up right away websites. Well, there is a huge, or rather large digital divide between the Latino community and the non-minority community. And in working with the governor and the secretary, they very quickly threw up a COVID hotline where people can call to get accurate information. And not only English, but Spanish and Hmong as well. And that's been hugely successful.
Oh, interesting. And so that was with the state folks. What about the CDC? Where have you seen some places lacking that they've been able to make progress working with you?
Yeah. Well, early on, we would go to the CDC website and we saw that there was a tremendous number of resources only available in English and some rather dated and cryptic, you know, a handful literally of documents that were available in Spanish. The task force, the COVID task force at the White House at the time, their plan was only made available in English, et cetera. So I have to give credit. We worked with the CDC. It took about a month and a half, but now their website is offering COVID information in 28 languages. So I do have to tip my hat to them for making those corrections and adjustments. And like I said, now they've become a valued partner in our effort.
We're discussing how the pandemic affects Wisconsin's Latino communities and barriers to accessing vaccines. Daryl Morin is president of Forward Latino, a nonprofit based in Franklin, south of Milwaukee. And the lines are open. You can call 800-642-1234. We're wondering, how have you seen the coronavirus affecting your Hispanic community? How do you think leaders could change something? What would make a difference in your life? How confident are you in information you've received about the vaccine? Maybe your family depends on the bilingual services that Daryl's been talking about. Share that at 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Daryl, how is Forward Latino working with pharmacies? Because they're a critical piece in the effort to make sure that the immunizations are successful.
It's critically important that we use every mechanism and every location, because access to local locations is a great challenge for many members of our community. While we're excited and we appreciate a number of retailers participating in the CDC program that's called the Retail Pharmacy, the Federal Retail Pharmacy Program, we did have a number of issues, quite honestly, with a number of them with the way they were implementing it. They were following traditional protocols, et cetera, where they were asking individuals for requiring either insurance or their driver's license or some form of government ID. And many in our community don't have that. Whether it's because of socioeconomic conditions, whether they're elderly, or whether it's an issue of residency and immigration status. So we actually had, we're receiving reports and we're speaking with individuals who either went to go and get vaccinated, but when they saw that requirement, just simply handed the form back and told the person at the store, you know, I've changed my mind, I'm not going to get it. And sadly, we also found instances where people were turned away because store associates thought it was a requirement. Mm-hmm. So we've been reaching out to these retailers, recommending changes. I do have to give a lot of, express my appreciation for Walgreens. Within 3 days, working with us, the governor's secretary's office, and the CDC, they completely changed, or they modified their program to eliminate those barriers at all 9,800 stores across the U.S. So kudos to Walgreens for making that effort so quickly.
Wow. Yeah, because the fact is eligibility to receive a COVID-19 vaccine in the U.S. is not linked to immigration status, but some places are still asking for documentation or IDs, types of information that might be a deterrent for Hispanic adults, not just because of their status, but even because of their connection to other family members. And it seems like that brings us back to this concept of this is not about one person. Vaccination affects everyone in families and communities.
That's absolutely the case. Seeing that this is a federal health emergency, the vaccine program's being administered federally, and one of the requirements is that it be made available to all that are eligible per CDC recommendations. So everyone at this point who's 12 years old or older is eligible to receive the Pfizer vaccine, regardless of insurance, immigration status. There are just no requirements there. And anyone 16 years or older are eligible to get the Moderna and the J&J vaccine. So our big message that we're really pushing out there is that the vaccine is safe, it's effective, it's free, and everyone 12 years and older is available to get some form of vaccination.
And not just because that happens to be what public policy officials drew up, but what is the public health case for saying it shouldn't matter if you have an ID if you want to get the vaccine?
Mm-hmm. Well, being a public health emergency, you know, we come into contact literally with hundreds or thousands of people every day. We touch the surfaces other people's, other individuals touch, et cetera. So every person who gets vaccinated is potentially saving lives. And, you know, there's the human aspect of this with regards to health and the healthcare crises that the pandemic has created. There's also the economic argument as well. You know, if people really want to open up the economy as quickly as possible, if people really want to open up our schools as quickly as possible, the answer is easy. You can go to any local pharmacy or your local healthcare provider in about 15 minutes, get a shot, and you're helping not only yourself, but the people around you and our country. So.
The Kaiser Family Foundation study that we're talking about during this hour also acknowledges that Hispanic people are more likely to work in essential jobs. Is that true here in Wisconsin, too? And how does that change the calculation if they're thinking about getting the vaccine?
That's probably been the saddest part of some of the work that we've done. As you know, we're a national organization, so we get calls and provide assistance across the country. But we do see the clusters that are happening here. There are Latinos that are essential workers working in healthcare and in hospitals and nursing homes that are working in the agriculture industry. We saw the clusters break out at the meatpacking plants here. And certain liabilities were given to companies at that time that said they didn't need to provide essential protection to these workers. And we saw the loss of life. We saw the financial hardships that were created. So that is definitely has been one of the saddest and darkest chapters of this whole thing. And as you mentioned before, when you live in a multi-generational household, when you bring something home, it's just not isolated to you, but it gets transferred to your parents and to your children as well.
Yeah. Theron Morin is president of Forward Latino. We're talking about work to bridge the gap between people who want the coronavirus vaccine and the actual access that allows people to roll up their sleeves and get the shots. We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What do you want to see from leaders as we try to deal with racial disparities in this coronavirus pandemic? Maybe it's about immunizations or about infection rates, or maybe it's economic issues. Call, ask your question, or share your story at 800-642-1234. You can also send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Keely Boltina. This conversation continues on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network. When you work a job that pays you by the hour, it can be a financial burden to take time away from work, to make a health appointment, even to get a coronavirus vaccine. And that's assuming your employer is willing to let you take the time off and find a way to cover for you. That's a real dilemma for people who want to get vaccinated, but who can't just walk away from their jobs. It's affecting Wisconsin's Latino population. We're talking about the disproportionate challenges Hispanic people face in this pandemic. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina. Our guest is Daryl Morin. He's working to provide vaccine information and access to Latinos in Wisconsin. Your calls are welcome at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know? Give us a call. Share your story. And Daryl, your organization is trying to partner with business groups and employers to eliminate some of these barriers to vaccination. How do you think that helps get more shots in people's arms?
Well, that's absolutely correct. We're working with a number of business groups right now and sharing with them the information that we've gathered that simply proves that it's in their best financial interest to actually let their employees become vaccinated. And those larger employees, we're actually saying, you know, we can help bring a portable vaccination clinic to your work site. Not only is it going to keep people, you know, working, make them more productive, et cetera, but it's going to hit their bottom line as well. So we're working with those groups trying to make that happen. And so far, for the most part, we've met with a great welcoming sense from many of the business groups. So we appreciate that partnership.
The study that we're citing from the Kaiser Family Foundation says that more than half of the employed unvaccinated Hispanic adults surveyed that are not yet ready to get the vaccine say they would be more likely to get it if their employer gave them paid time off to get vaccinated or, as you mentioned earlier, to recover from potential side effects that might happen right away. What are people weighing when they try to figure out if they can take time off of work to get the vaccine or if it's just not worth it?
Yeah. So when we speak with our folks in the various communities throughout Wisconsin, we hear several different themes. One is that they can't get the time off to go, or they can't get paid time off to go. And many of these individuals work paycheck to paycheck. So losing a half day, et cetera, it would present a very difficult challenge. Sadly, we've also heard others say that they're fearful they may lose their jobs if they take a morning off to go get vaccinated, et cetera. So there is a certain degree of fear there beyond just the loss of pay. And that's something that we're really trying to drive home with the business groups, that they themselves need to educate employers as well on the benefits that this would provide them.
And when you put that in front of people who employ workers, how do they respond? Do they understand? Is it something they realized before?
I think one of the biggest things, part of this campaign that we're doing in working with them is really opening up their eyes so they see these things from a different perspective, really help humanize it and share some of the challenges that are unique to, you know, communities of color and particularly the Hispanic community.
We are discussing how the pandemic affects Wisconsin's Latino communities and barriers to accessing vaccines. Daryl Morin is president of Forward Latino. That's a nonprofit based in Franklin, south of Milwaukee. And you're listening to this conversation here on the Ideas Network. Daryl, multiple times in our conversation, you've talked about working with different agencies and really trying to collaborate. How do you and state health officials plan to reach out to Latinos in rural communities that may have healthcare challenges? And, you know, you point to the websites, a lot of communities lack broadband.
Correct. It is a huge issue. Once again, in working with the Department of Health, we appreciate that they've actually set up this hotline with Spanish speakers and Hmong speakers available to answer questions and actually assist in making those vaccine appointments. That being said, we're working with them and with some other vaccinator partners so that we can take clinics into these communities, communities where there are a large number of dairies or where there is agriculture, et cetera, because it's just not feasible for many in our community to travel to an urban area to get these. You know, we also deal with the issues of language. A lot of people think they understand English well enough to have a conversation with the doctor, but it can create a lot of confusion when you think you understand, but you don't. So it's making sure there's the language access available as well as the physical access to the vaccine.
You've been working with the governor's office and the state health department. How have you seen your perspective influence and affect the response to the pandemic?
Well, it was almost immediate. As I mentioned before, they were very quick to throw up the websites. And once we shared the concerns we had due to the digital divide and limited access so many Latinos have to the internet, they were quick to react and throw up that hotline. We are working with them and vaccinators, once again, to make these clinics available where needed. And I must also say, they've been critical. When we've reached out to Walgreens, when we reached out to Kroger, which owns Pick and Save and Mariano's, when we reached out to CVS, they did the same as well to share the same concerns. Everybody understands this is a public health emergency and that we all need to work together. So I really think this can be a model for how government, nonprofits, and the private sector can work together for the betterment of all.
We have the information. Hispanic communities are disproportionately affected by COVID-19, more infections, more hospitalizations, more death. What do you want people across the state to understand about this circumstance?
The primary points we're really trying to get across here in English and in Spanish throughout our community, and this applies for everyone, it's the vaccine is safe. Right. Over 263 million doses have been distributed and administered in the U.S. alone. It is effective. If you get these vaccines, the Moderna and Pfizer, well over 90% effectiveness. The J&J, almost 100% that you will not get a serious illness if you do catch COVID, et cetera. It's free. And lastly, and most importantly, it's available to everyone in the eligible age groups to get it. There is no insurance requirement. There's no government ID requirement. It's simply available to all.
Daryl, thank you for helping to share that information and for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. And thank you for highlighting this really important information. We appreciate it.
Daryl Morin is president of Forward Latino. The organization recently launched Por Mi Familia, a campaign to help Wisconsin's Latino community get the COVID-19 vaccine. And we've spent this hour talking about how Hispanic communities are disproportionately affected by challenges during the coronavirus pandemic and what advocates are doing to try to make things better for Hispanic communities and for everyone across Wisconsin. Thank you for joining us on The Morning Show. If you have ideas for things you'd like to talk about on our program, send us an email. You can email it straight to ideas@WPR.org. We appreciate you joining us. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina, and you're listening to The Ideas Network.